NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, Locked On NHL Podcast, Tuesday edition of the show. Thanks for making us your first listen every day. We're free and available on all platforms. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres, Mike DiStefano from Locked On Leafs. Special guest today, Ross Levitan from the Locked On Senators Podcast is joining us. Two of the coolest Canadians that I know. And after going to a Sabres-Leafs game on Saturday, you guys are going to need a bounce back because there were some jerks in that crowd on Saturday night. Mike, did I text you about that?
No, you didn't. Who was in the crowd? Some jerk Canadians?
There were a couple Leafs fans, a couple rows in front of me that got kicked out. They were not being too nice, I would say.
Must be my buddy Ian. My buddy Ian gets rowdy. I know he went to the game. I bet it was him. Mm-hmm. That's stiff.
There were more Leaf fans there than I thought there'd be. The border just opening, I thought, you know, maybe there wouldn't be, you know, half the crowd in Buffalo like there normally is, but there was a lot. There was a lot in there.
I'm surprised though, because it costs $150 to come back over the border.
Right, for the test. Right?
Yeah. So like even if you just want to go for the game, whatever you're paying for your ticket, whatever your day is, tack on an extra $150 for your test on the way back. So I don't know of many people who are gonna be willing to do that. Like that's not jump change.
So Ross is on, by the way, to talk Senators. There is a lot going on with them right now, COVID protocols and whatnot. We'll talk Senators. We want to talk about the Hall of Fame a little bit. The New York Islanders, just kind of go through the Metro a little bit. I might have a rant brewing about the New York Rangers we'll see about. And then also Calder Trophy odds at Bet Online. We've got a little bit later. Ross, though, you said you were coming over the border. So you're going through that process, right? So you've got to get tested in Canada, and then you can come back?
Yeah, I'm only going down for 72 hours, and out here, at least, I'm in Manitoba now, and we can just go to Shoppers, $40, quick test, and away you go, and you only need it on the way back, so you get tested in Canada, going down to see Jake Sanderson, the North Dakota Fighting Hawks, play two games against University of Minnesota Duluth, nice little rivalry NCHC matchup this weekend, then I'll be right back on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. So we did bring you on obviously to talk about the Senators. I know you don't want to talk about this probably.
Hey, I know we're going to have to do it on Locked On Senators the rest of the week as well. We got a few good interviews brewing, but right now no games to preview anymore. It was going to be a busy week. It was a busy month, boys. Senators had 15 games scheduled in the first 27 days of November. It was early and often. And then all of a sudden we're pulling the plug, probably a little too late, right? 10 guys on the COVID protocol list. And it all started with Austin Watson on November 5th. And at that point, we've seen it around the league, right? Certain guys get it and you contain it. It's not like it's a once in a lifetime, like what's going to happen next. But then when you see another player and an associate coach 2 days later get it, then I think you start paying a bit more attention. Then the day after, two more guys get it. And at that point, I would have hit the panic button and figured it out from there. The Senators were on their way to Boston. They play that game in Boston, and an hour before, Victor Mete gets put on the list. He's now the sixth member of the COVID protocol list. They play the game in Boston, and we interviewed Alex Formanton on Locked On Senators at the start of the season, and he's roommates with Mete. So initially, I'm like, okay, so Mete's in COVID protocol, and I know Formanton lives with him. Formanton gets in a scrap that night, pretty close contact, and then the next day, he's put on the COVID protocol list. And as you get what I'm saying, it's sort of these middle six guys, lower the lineup, sure. I don't know if that's playing in the NHL's mind at all, is the quality of the integrity of the game. Is it being affected? But then when you lose your starting goalie and then your leading scorer in Matt Murray and then ultimately Drake Batherson, who was out of the lineup in their final game on Sunday, the NHL just had no choice. So I think Sens fans and people around the team were thinking, better late than never, but this really should have been taken care of last week. It was 10 days between their first positive case of this outbreak and when they decided to postpone games.
Well, to me, kind of the crazy thing was the fact that it wasn't that there was like 10 positives, that there was like consecutive days we were seeing positives pop up day after day after day. If this was a year ago, it never would have got this far. It never would have. Maybe after like the second or third day when there were four or five, maybe as much as six guys who hit the COVID list, they're stopping it. Like, done. Practice done for the week. We're taking the week off. And this year, because of the condensed schedule, they really wanted to see how far they could test it. And then I guess we always wonder, what's the magic number? I guess the magic number is 10, right? 10 guys hit the COVID list, and then they're like, all right, we got to shut it down. So, I mean, I really don't understand. It was kind of unfair to the players. They had to play a back-to-back this weekend without 14 regulars. They missed 14 regulars in their lineup this weekend. They had to play back-to-back. Ridiculous. Yeah,
the worst part is, too, if they had postponed games earlier on, they would have avoided a couple major injuries as well. Yeah. Shane Pinto was rushed back. He gets hurt off a face-off and a no-contact play, really. And then Eric Branstrom, one of the guys who gets called up, Sens fans still high on him, upside to be debated. He breaks his hand blocking a shot. So it really just went from bad to worse if you're a Sens fan or a member of the organization who had expectations to take a step forward this year. They were 3-6-1 when they got their first positive test and then only had the one win against Pittsburgh in their next six games afterwards. So it certainly was a stumbling block. Not the only reason by any stretch why the start wasn't very good, but it definitely didn't help either.
What do you have to say to some other fan bases that are not that they're like, I don't really know how to explain this, but like San Jose and Pittsburgh clearly dealt with a pretty big outbreak themselves, upwards of, you know, 6-7 guys. And then now you hear today when the league decided to finally postpone games in Ottawa and they're like, well, what the heck? How come they get to not play and they get to recuperate where we had to play through this? You know, why do you believe that Ottawa specifically is when, like, this is the team that finally they decide enough is enough?
Well, there's never been this many at the same time, right, Mikey? And you mentioned it, too. It's the consecutive days. It was five straight days from November 7th through the 11th where you're having multiple players every single day. And I read somewhere, it wasn't really keyed in on, but I thought it was interesting that it was all from the same exposure. They couldn't draw it back to multiple exposures. And I found that interesting because it just shows that from the time it infects you until the time you test positive, it incubates. It's not the same for each guy. So you're seeing the situation where you don't know how many guys have it. So just pull the plug. And this is a team who had canceled practices throughout that week. They played four games since their last practice. And I'm sure that didn't help. Funny enough, like Sens fans are holding on to like whatever they can get right now because wins and playoffs are so far-fetched. They had a streak going, longest active NHL streak where they didn't get shut out. It was 77 straight games that they hadn't been shut out. And then they got shut out two of the last three games. And funny enough, this is where I thought the game in Boston should have been postponed. These three games were afterwards. Two of them against Western Conference teams. So you wonder if the fact that it's so much harder to reschedule those games, if that played a bit of a factor here as well.
Do we know, by the way, and there might not be an answer to this out there, but do we know if any other players on other teams have been connected to the COVID outbreak in Ottawa and severe symptoms at all? Or we've been pretty hush-hush on like whether or not anybody's actually sick.
Pretty hush-hush. DJ Smith did say that there were symptoms of everyone involved, but wouldn't divulge of how serious. Now, Austin Watson posted a video on his Instagram the other day playing with his like infant daughter, so you got to think if he's comfortable enough to be around her that it can't be a situation that's too serious, or at least he's on the other side of it. Again, he was the first guy to test positive. If that's who he's been in there for 10 days, he'd be on the way out, if anything else. But that being said, there's not really any information out there in terms of how serious it is. You got to just hope that guys can come back, right? Because we saw, like Ottawa saw firsthand, Patrick Kane gets left off COVID protocol, scores a hat trick against them that night, no practice or anything. But I think that's going to take this team a few extra days to get back on track and get back on the practice ice. This is already a really young team, a team with not much experience, and now you're just throwing a huge wrench into things. And the kind of the ironic part is, I think Sens fans, if they could have picked the decor that started opening night or the decor that only had two of those players that played in this past week, they probably would take the latter because it was a lot more young, up-and-coming prospects, some first-round picks like Eric Branstrom.
I heard Lassie Thompson made a real impression in the little time that he was able to play a couple of nights ago.
He did, yeah. He ultimately had the most time on ice in any Senators debut in the last decade. David Runblad, nice throwback name, had the previous record. Lassie played 22 and a half minutes, and that was a night after playing 26 in Belleville. And then got the call up. And so he's played four games in the last six nights between AHL and NHL. not an easy spot for a 20-year-old defenseman to come into the league. And then he's paired with Thomas Chabot going, he's a guy who's over the boards every other shift. So you get a sense of what you have in the system. Jacob Bernard Docker, another guy who got another taste. He played 5 games last year, but didn't really establish himself. He'll probably go back to Belleville when things are organized. But the real fallout, boys, is they didn't have any defense left. Like Maxence Gouinette, a 7th-round pick in 2019, was their last signed guy. And they had to call him up. He didn't end up playing, but they ended up having to sign Zach Leslie, who's a local kid, but was on a one-way AHL contract just to have the minimum in case something else happened. So the implications are wild. And I know everyone picks on Ottawa for having a low payroll, but their payroll's expanded by $7 million. That's how many guys they've had to call up during this whole thing. So they went from 26th highest payroll to 13th just over the last week. So it just shows you how quickly things can kind of fall apart in a hurry in the days we're living in right now.
Well, the crazy part is, like, if this were to have happened to a team who was up against the cap, like, they wouldn't have been able to.
No, we get more Alex Bishops, eh? Some more Canadian university kids.
Exactly, though. But, like, actually, you would have had to play if there were 4 or 5 guys on the Maple Leafs who end up testing positive for COVID and they have to come out, but not enough for them to obviously put them on IR. The Maple Leafs would have to play severely shorthanded. They would have to play 4 or 5 game or 4 or 5 players short before they can do any type of emergency call up. Like, I find it bizarre. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, DJ certainly hinted at the fact they were playing shorthanded after the Calgary game. He asked what the difference was, and he said, well, the Flames were playing with 4 lines and 6 defensemen, kind of coining that maybe his team wasn't when Logan Shaw's your second line winger.
Yeah, he got a little salty afterward because I think I saw one of the beat writers asked about, you know, how do you feel in the midst of this losing skid? And it's like, dude, it's our AHL squad right now playing up against NHL players. What do you mean? How do I feel? It's kind of brutal. I don't know. Is there any, like you said, any silver lining about some guys who maybe have stepped up outside of Lassie Thompson and Lassie Thompson over the last couple of days?
Well, everyone's favorite story is Igor Sokolov in Ottawa. If you don't know the story, he was passed over in 2 straight drafts, went 61st overall, second last pick of the second round, and then led Belleville in scoring last year as a rookie. And he's such a likable guy. He's been on our show and many others. He's just, he's that 6'4" Russian bear that's just so friendly. So he got his first taste of NHL action, took a couple offensive zone penalties the other night, but had some good looks as well. They just haven't been able to get any offense going, really. Like the game against Pittsburgh, sure, they scored some goals and had some guys had their first, like Parker Kelly and Michael Delzato. They get their first of the year, but it's really the team that's been carried by their veterans and carried. You won 1 of your last 6 games. Is that even a thing? But like Drake Batherson has 2 4-point nights in that stretch. He's been a real good story, but we knew that he was a great player. He's unbelievable, actually. But then you're looking at other guys who, like Brady Tkachuk, he gets the C. He's got 3 points in 4 games. He's a guy who everyone said, oh, he's a 40-point guy. And I mean, if he can carry this up, you really like kind of the nucleus of what's happening here. But there's no like real young kid that's come up and just grabbed the bull by the horns or that sort of thing, other than Lassie. And Philip Gustafson, I got to give him a shout out too, although I don't think it's really COVID related. He got his first 2 wins of the season before all this happened. However, he's been kind of stuck in a tough situation where he's on the 2-way contract. They don't want to lose Forsberg off of waivers. Like Forsberg was claimed on waivers, I think, 3 times last year. So they don't want to risk that, knowing that this situation with Matt Murray, not only with COVID, but Murray's been in and out of different injuries the last year. So they just want to keep Forsberg for this year. And that's putting Gus in a situation where he has to continue his AHL career when he's probably past that, but he's really stepped up every chance he gets at the NHL level.
Mike, did you see Aaron Dell play against the Leafs the other night for Buffalo?
Oh yeah.
The Sabres claim Anton Forsberg if he plays on waivers. So that would be my inclination.
How's Andy still doing? I gotta ask about my boy.
With who?
Craig Anderson. Best goalie in franchise history.
Delight so far.
Fun to watch. He's old school. Hey, just kicking out pads.
It's amazing that he still has the side to side movement that he has at 40 years old. And you could tell they already miss him because they had a hot start to the year. He missed the last 3 games due to injury, and they won the one in Edmonton. So they got 1 good game in that, but the other 2, they lost mostly because of their goaltending. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he's been perfectly good enough to think they'll get like a third round pick for him at the deadline to go be somebody's backup and get one last shot at a Stanley Cup. That's my prediction for him the rest of the way. Couple other things on the Senators COVID situation. Ross Levitan from the Locked On Senators podcast joining us here. Do we know anything maybe about when they might make these games up that they're postponing?
No idea. Right now, it seems like the next game is going to be at Colorado. They start a 4-game road trip on November 22nd. So they just want to be ready to go for that because I don't know how many extra bodies you can bring on the plane out west, that whole thing. So right now, it's just a matter of getting healthy. Of course, the NHL left that full month with the Olympic break. How much they want to cut into that is another story. But you got to think maybe at the start or end of it, you could sneak in a game or two as well.
Well, that's exactly where I wanted to take this next. It's more of like a broader like league point. Mm-hmm. But I saw Frank Saravelli writing about that earlier today, that now contractually with the Senators games being postponed, the NHL now has the ability to withdraw participation from the Beijing games. Now,
I believe they have until
Go ahead.
I believe it's till they have until January 5th to officially withdraw, though, right?
January 5th is when they have until to do that. Yeah. I'm just making sure that I have that story open by Saravelli. Yes, January 5th. So doesn't it feel like, though, that it would have to take more than this for them to withdraw from the Olympics? Like three games, that's it, and you're out? Because at the same time, though.
Here's the thing, Joe. Here's the thing. They gave them the Olympics, but there was always this caveat that if something went wrong, they were going to take it away. If there's anything we know about the NHL, it's that they do business that's best for them. And if this means that they're not going to go to the Olympics to try and get the season in, and they use this as an excuse, I wouldn't be shocked.
Ironic that it's the Senators that are in the middle of it, because a lot of Sens fans think that if Dominic Hasek didn't go to the 06 Olympics, there might be a parade or a banner hanging in Ottawa.
That's even here. We talk about that 06 series. That like one of the best series like of my lifetime as a 26-year-old Sabre fan. There's not really
game one was what 7-6
7-6
overtime.
That is the greatest hockey game I have ever witnessed.
For me, it was game five in Buffalo the next year. But I see where you're going with it.
But no, you're right. Like Hasek at the Olympics that year, he gets hurt and they had to start Ray Emery. That's a completely different series if Hasek plays, because even at that age, he was unbelievable.
Oh, I think he was like 28-10 before he got hurt at the Olympics, like a .930 save percentage. He was lights out.
So Senator
Hasek 8x10, by the way.
Really? Oh, there you go. Pilsy, my co-host, has a Hasek jersey hanging in the background always.
Love it. So I think that, Mike, like you make a point. Like to me, though, what would it mean if they pulled out for a 3-game postponement? It would mean that if there was any postponement at all, they were always going to pull out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, how skeptical were you when this deal went down that they said we're going to go to the Olympics with a clause that allows us to pull out? We're skeptical legitimately the minute that that deal came through. Right. And now it's like we always said, if there's any point where they have an opportunity or they have an excuse to pull out, I would not be shocked if they exercise that clause. I hope they don't. I really do hope they don't. But I wouldn't be shocked if they do. The thing that I think is also because it's what it's the Devils, Islanders and Rangers games that are all being done.
Not the Islanders. You got the other two, the Thursday games against Nashville.
OK, so you could kind of do the Rangers and the Devils. Well, because but they're one's a home game, one's a road game, right?
Exactly.
I was gonna say if they were all road games, you could hit up the tri-state area and just kind of hit those two games back to back and try and fit one in there and then eventually get a game in Nashville. But if you got to do a home and a road game, then it does make things a little bit difficult unless the NHL comes up with some agreements and allows them to do a road game just to kind of get it done. I think we saw that happen last year where maybe it was in football. It was in some sport.
No, it was
where,
the Jays. The Jays played in Los Angeles. They played the Angels as a home game.
There was something else where they got to keep like all the gate money or something like that. But it was in somebody else's
last
building.
Change and all that.
Yeah, it was something like that. I remember exactly what it was. No, like literally like they made the money off of the other person's building. Like they got to buy the game. Right. Or something like that. Actually, I think it was in the CFL where they were like trying to buy the game or something like that as a home game because they were trying to get it rescheduled. I think it's the game that's playing tonight in Toronto, actually, funny enough. But anyways, I hope that this doesn't end up costing the Olympics. I kind of take it
back. Desperately I want it to happen.
Yeah, like I doubt it will, actually, now that I think about it. But is it just so NHL for them to do that?
I'll be so upset. You guys don't even know. I'll be so pissed if they end up not going to the Olympic Games over a 3-game postponement. I mean, I get it if it's like a multi-team, multiple games postponement, like all the way around. But yeah. I've been waiting a decade to see this tournament back with the best in the world. And, man, if they pull out of it, oh, that's going to hurt.
Yeah, Ross, he won't be able to cheer on a bronze medal win. It's going to be a heartbreaking for Joe.
Who do you got winning silver? Come on, at least give me silver for the U.S.
No.
Maybe the Germans will repeat. They've got some guys this year.
Yeah, Leon, Big Mo Sider.
Stutzla.
Timmy Superstar. Let's go.
Stu.
Remember my boy J.J. Paterka I told you about before the season? He's like third in the AHL in scoring or something like that. He's on Team Germany.
Tell Marco Sturm to strap him back up. I think he's still assistant coach for the Kings.
What's Christian Ehrhoff doing? Is he
not with the T-Blades. Not with the T-Blades. Come on.
All right. Do you think, Ross, did we miss anything here? Or do you think we pretty much covered everything that's going on with Ottawa?
No, I think the most important thing, obviously, is their health. And the second most important thing is the Olympics versus the Senators making up those games. I mean, for the other teams, sure. But the Senators aren't going to be within 3 games of the playoff spot. So, whatever.
I wonder if they could, like hopefully, at the end of the season, like kind of similarly to what we saw last year, where it was like Vancouver and Calgary were both eliminated. Right. So they just rattled off 3 games in a row at the end of the year. Like the day before, I think the playoffs started, they finally wrapped it up, or it was even maybe like that afternoon. And then the playoffs started that night.
Yeah.
Whereas if they wrapped it all up, if Edmonton's eliminated or Ottawa's eliminated, maybe they could try and do something there, but I guess they would probably rather get something done earlier than that. But that's just another possibility, I suppose. I don't know.
Well, why don't we let's start to transition. We'll take a timeout here, and then when we come back, get into some other headlines that are going on around the league. Joe DiBiase, Mike DiStefano, Ross Levitan is going to hang out a little bit longer here on the Locked On NHL podcast. Before we continue on, though, we want to remind you this episode is brought to you by DirecTV, a simple way to get all the entertainment you love without the hassle. DirecTV Stream brings you live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, which means you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So stop waiting and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Could have watched Monday Night Football tonight at DirecTV. Did you have any fantasy implications, by the way, Mike? Is that what we were focusing on that before we got going here?
I was. I had some both fantasy and gambling implications on it. Debo Samuel. So
things went well.
Yeah,
it's been so good.
And I was on the Niners, so double well.
Speaking of gambling, by the way, I'm going to tell you more about Bet Online in a little bit, but there's one futures bet at Bet Online that I wanted to bring up before we get into some other stuff, and that is the odds for the Calder Trophy. I had you guys guess before we got rolling here on who the favorites are. So for the listeners, Lucas Raymond and Trevor Zegras are the co-favorites going right now, with Cole Caufield still third in the odds, despite the fact he had 0 points up with Montreal and got sent down and is still in the AHL. He is then followed by Moritz Seider, another Red Wing in there, and then Spencer Knight is in fifth at plus 1,300, way back of the other four. I mean, we'll debate in a second here who we think is going to win it, but I think we're all in agreement. None of us would bet Cole Caufield.
No.
I'm on a big time rivalry tour with Cole Caufield on my show. I've got the take that Shane Pinto is going to have a better career than Cole Caufield. They were both nominated for the Hobie Baker, so that's kind of where this got off the ground. And then they played their first NHL game against each other. Pinto had a point, Caufield didn't, and I've just been running with it. I brought it up with Shane Pinto as well when we had him on. I said, I heard you guys are buddies. He gave me the whole answer. So I teed him up because they played World Juniors together in 2019, and Pinto won best forward at the tournament for Team USA. So I asked him, I said, when you guys play together, though, who's the best forward? So obviously that's there. So I won't be voting for Cole Caulfield. I will abstain my vote.
So I wonder, Mike, because we've talked about this with the Hart before, especially like with the Edmonton guys, with Dreisaitl and McDavid almost kind of taking votes away from each other. And I don't think I've ever really thought about that type of thinking with the Calder. But I guess that could happen in Detroit. If they're both so good that you can't really differentiate between the two on who's been more impactful to their team, then there's the pathway for Trevor Zegras to sneak in there.
I don't know if it works the same, because like when it comes to the Hart Trophy, you're thinking about like MVP, right? So can you have two MVPs on the same team? Mm-hmm. Sometimes the answer is no. So you have to pick between which one is most valuable. Whereas the Calder is just straight up who's the best rookie. And if those two are the best rookies, then they're going to get the first and second place votes, I think. So to me, I don't know if I really necessarily think that could end up becoming an issue here. But I think, I mean, Lucas Raymond and Mo Sider to me right now, definitely 1-2. Man, they're building something out in Detroit. Stevie Y is doing some good things out there.
Yeah, they're playing well right now. All right, so a couple other things I want to get to.
How far is Dawson Mercer?
I don't have him listed.
He should be right there, man. He's killing it. He's got 11 points in 14 games playing second line center. He really got thrust into that role, right, with Jack Hughes going down early, and they're like, all right, kid, can you sink or swim? And he's awesome. You know, a good Newfoundland guy, he's going to step in a lineup and just do what he has to do. So, no, Dawson Mercer, he was really high on my list going to that 2020 draft. I think he ended up going like 13th, 15th, around that part of the draft, and he stepped right in, man. He looks great.
Yeah, I watched him play the game the other night against Boston. They ended up losing, but Mercer had a couple of points, scored a nice goal.
Fast kid, hey?
I think he scored the next night, too, against the Rangers. So Dawson Mercer's a guy who is starting to go up my rankings a little bit for the Calder and might be able to sprinkle a little bit if there's some good value, some good odds.
I got him
18th overall, just to correct myself.
Okay. I got him here at plus 1,500 right after night. That is the same odds as Bo Byram, Jeremy Swayman, and a little bit above Michael Bunting, who's still hanging around in the odds.
How do you guys feel about Nedeljkovic being so close to winning the Calder, but because of the shortened season, he's still up for it this year? Not like he's going to have the wins to do it, but he can be a two-time nominee for Rookie of the Year.
Wait, I did not realize until this very second that he is
on the list.
He is, yeah. Yeah, I don't.
That's the same vibes as Matt Murray showing up to the NHL awards for Rookie of the Year, and he has two Stanley Cup rings, and he's going up for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think he'll win it, but it's kind of weird how that is the case.
Yeah, it's like Matthew Schwinnard. I don't know if you know that story. He was first-round pick in 2000, and they didn't sign him. He re-entered the draft and went in the second round. It's like, damn. Oops.
Nedeljkovic, hey, maybe if Detroit keeps playing well and they make the playoffs, you'll have the argument that Pierre LeBrun got into with Kaprizov, where voters try to almost redefine the award and who should be eligible. So I could see that maybe factoring into whether or not he gets votes too. But
what do you think we get more of that? Like, what award do you think we get the most of that? Where the analysts try to like spin the award, because the Norris comes to mind, because offensive defenseman versus shutdown guys. But I think the Calder's right up there too.
I always think of the Jack Adams, the surprise team of the year award
for sure.
So
that's always the good one to go to bet online and hit a few long shots. If you think the team has a chance, you're like, if they make playoffs, he's going to win Coach of the Year.
That's something now that I really want to pull up odds on. We're going to get to some other stuff, the Hall of Fame. And I want to talk about the Metro a little bit, but what are the chances? Hey,
good time to have me on. First ever drafted Ottawa Senator going to the Hall of Fame tonight.
Yeah, that's right. Marius Hossa.
Hossa is the first ever.
First ever. Second player to play after your boy Dominic Hasek. Those are the only guys who've ever won the jersey.
Wow.
Really?
Real quick.
Brian Murray is a snub. He should be in there 10 years ago, but.
Real quick. Dean Evason and Rod Brindamore, by the way, co-favorites for the Jack Adams.
Oh, favorites. I was going to say Evason would have been a nice long shot before the season, maybe.
Yeah, he's a co-favorite right now. And then Tippett, Gerard Gallant are shortly thereafter. But let's talk about the Hall of Fame. You mentioned it. I didn't know that Hossa was the first drafted senator ever. Mike, I think you watched some of the speeches, right?
Yep.
So I'll start, Ross, with you. Like, that for Ottawa, that's got to be awesome tonight.
It's cool. It's a little overshadowed because it feels right now 3 years of eligibility, no Daniel Alfredsson still, and obviously he played his more or less full career in Ottawa, whereas Hossa had his best years outside of Ottawa, 3 Stanley Cups, 5 finals, and all that. But he was such a fun player to watch. He was a 3-time All-Star in Ottawa. I was like 7 years old when he made his debut. So he was really a part of that first group of players that I fell in love with watching. Hit 40 goals in Ottawa. And then it was one of those situations where I was too young to understand the contract implications at that time. But now looking back, now looking around the league, it happens so often where a player is a restricted free agent. They can't come to a deal on a long-term contract. So what Ottawa did is they signed him to a 2-year deal and then flipped him right away behind his back. So they kind of tough look for John Muckler, the then GM, to take a player. And there were implications beyond that, right? They trade Hossa, Danny Heatley, which worked out. He scores 100 right. goals the next 2 years. So, I mean, you don't get the pizza line without that. But what you lost in Hossa, then his countryman, Zdeno Chara, hated the way that that happened, and he leaves as a free agent after the next year. So there was definitely some longer-term implications, but what a fun player. It's insane to me that Hossa never was nominated for the Selke. He was just such a solid two-way guy, always defensively responsible, first PK unit, but you wanted him out. You wanted him out on the ice, whether you're up a goal or down a goal with 2 minutes left in the game, and I think that really tells you what kind of player he was.
Yeah, he was a pain in the ass. Like that's what that guy was on all 200 feet of the ice. Like that's Marian Hossa was not a fun player to play against, I would assume. And I've heard many players say that, especially over the last couple of weeks, as everyone's, you know, pumping up the tires of him, Jerome McGinley, Doug Wilson, and all these guys. But Marian Hossa, what I remember about him is just like you said, like the two-way nature about him, but the fact that he always found a way to score it like a key goal. Like it just seems like he was always sniffing around right when you needed it, and he got that big goal. He wasn't a guy who had like multiple, you know, 40, 50 goal seasons, but he was kind of known for scoring that key goal. And that's kind of what I always remember him for, along with being that two-way beast.
Kind of a fun story to look back on Marian Hossa's career. He was with the Portland Winterhawks in the WHL. He came over as an import. Unbelievable season, 45 goals in 53 games. Brendan Morrow was on that team too, and there's a couple other really good players, but they make it to the Memorial Cup, and he tears his ACL, MCL. You think he's done for like 2 years. Shows up to Ottawa, misses the first few weeks, and then there's a tweet here from one of his teammates, I think in that season, who said, and at this point, Ottawa had never made the playoffs. It was 1997. His first year was the first year they made playoffs, and he had 30 points in 60 games coming off such a big injury. And it just showed like this kid stepped in to the pro game in North America after, you know, playing in the Slovak men's league and just ripping it up. So just a super fun player to watch. You know, it's too bad. Like, obviously I mentioned before that, like, growing up, one of my best friends was Slovakian, so I always had an affinity with them, and they had such a golden age, right? Peter Bondra, then Marian Gaborik and Marian Hossa and Pavel Dimitra, rest in peace. And so many amazingly talented players. And I can't wait, because it looks like in this upcoming draft, there's 3 Slovaks that are going to be right up there, but they need a bit of a resurgence. Like, Chara's kind of the last man of that old guard of Slovaks. And Halak, too, stud.
Halak, but like, I was actually looking at their Olympic projection the other day, and like, yeah, all the guys you've heard of are like 35 plus. Like,
remember, Josef Stumpel, too? He was a good little player. Ziggy Palfy, if injuries didn't hit Palfy, he was an absolute legend.
Yeah. Host gave a shout out to Palfy in his Hall of Fame speech tonight.
Actually. Did he? Nice. Nice.
We kind of give a shout out to all of the Czechoslovakian players. Just kind of, you know,
better not have forgotten Senators and Sabres legend Andre Mazaros in there too.
Oh man, tank hero.
I think we just named every Slovak player that's ever played in the NHL.
Andre Sekera, I think we got to get to my boy
Richard Zednik. All right, name a Slovak.
We're gonna play that game. The who's the goalie that played for Calgary a couple years ago? Red Obera is another.
Okay,
was he Slovakian? I'm Roman, like 99% sure.
I think he might be Swiss. I know Roman Turek was Czech, but they used to have this guy Jan Lasek. Yes. They won world championships. with him as their 10. He was a Nashville guy, but dude, Halak's a nice little get too. Short guy, but could play like the best of them. But yeah, he's just an absolute star. And I mean, we can't talk Slovaks without Peter Stastny. I mean, the legend. So he was the first Slovak to be inducted in the Hall of Fame. His brothers there, Anton and Martin, I think. I might be messing up that last name, but it's great to see another representation. And boys, it won't be long before Zdeno Chara joins him. He's a first ballot whenever he's out too.
Berra, by the way, is Swiss. You know your nationalities for sure. Mike, did anything else stand out from the speeches that you saw?
Kim St. Pierre's speech was fantastic. She brought everyone up to her feet at the end, gave a nice glowing endorsement of the women's game. And you know, it's great. She's the first female goaltender to ever get inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. So she made some history tonight. Hers is fantastic. I'd recommend anybody go and kind of take a listen to her speech. It was great. Iggy had some funny parts. It almost seemed like Iginla though got a little bit I don't want to say like stage fright, but it seemed like he got a little overwhelmed. I don't think he anticipated being so jittery, and he like lost his place and went out. But his speech was a little bit all over the place, but it was just so great to see Jerome Iginla rightfully get put into the Hall of Fame. Like, that is somebody who I grew up just admiring. I know I grew up a Canucks fan, but I still love Jerome Iginla. Ross, I'm sure you could say the same thing being a Canadian and what he kind of meant to this country. Like, one of my fondest memories as a child is kind of watching the Calgary Flames run to the cup. That was like my first real like vivid memory of being completely engaged in like a Canadian team making a run to the cup. And it was just Jerome Iginla and the way that he played. He was an absolute animal remember the shift game 5, the shift in overtime, Buddy loses bucket, stays out there for a full like minute and a half. He's digging for pucks in the corner and eventually gets it to, I think, Saprykin, who buries the overtime winner to put them up 3-2 in the series. And in my mind, Jerome Iginla is a Stanley Cup champion. That goal from one off Jelena's skate, that goal went into the back of the net. They should have won Game 6 and should have won that series 4-2, but neither here nor there. But then obviously, sorry, Joe, but Iggy, the 2010 gold medal game, getting the puck up to Crosby for the game winner on home soil. It's my all time sports memory, and wouldn't have happened if Iginla wouldn't have given the puck up to Sidney Crosby. So, you know, I thank Jerome for all the memories, and you know, so happy that a dude who apparently is just as great a human off the ice as he was a hockey player on the ice rightfully ends up in the Hall of Fame tonight.
Member of the Triple Gold Club too: Olympic gold, World Junior gold, World Championship gold, World Cup gold, Memorial Cup champion twice over. Art Ross, Maurice Richard, two
everything
WHL
men,
every single thing. The highlights are long with him. He was a long time. It was him and Alfredson were the two longest serving captains in the NHL. He wore the C from 2003 all the way to 2013. With the Calgary Flames. And you mentioned those Olympic runs were unbelievable. I think an underrated part is he was the youngest player, I think, him and Simon Gagné on the 2002 team.
Yeah.
So to win two gold medals 8 years apart, I think that's pretty impressive in itself.
It's crazy, too, that he kind of established himself as that winner over his career, given when this would have been Eichel was still a Sabre. And just kind of looking for precedent for a player that good that just couldn't sniff the playoffs, couldn't get into the playoffs, had so much trouble early in his career winning. And the guy that I fit the best of that was Iginla. He went from before really even entering, I'm too young to really remember like what his reputation would have been like at the time, but I guess I can imagine it knowing what the Sabres just went through what Buffalo just went through, you know, with Eichel, and he's not a winner and whatnot, and you can't make the playoffs, and how much of that is on him. Iginla played two playoff games at 18 in 1996, his first two NHL games. Hadn't even played the regular season yet, so that could have been like, you know, coming up from juniors or college, wherever he would have played, probably juniors.
Juniors, yeah. He had 63 goals in 63 games that year, and then had 16 goals in 16 playoff games. So that's a 80-goal season in 80 games, pretty decent.
Crazy. So then he comes up, he plays two playoff games for the Flames. Then starting the next year, 96-97, he's a 19-year-old. He goes from that season till 2003-2004. That is an 8-year gap before he plays another playoff game. I mean, he went the first decade of his career without being in the playoffs, and he ends his career with all the achievements you just mentioned, and he always found himself in the cup, or, well, he found himself in the cup in 03-04, but always in the playoffs, and he became that guy late in his career with Pittsburgh and Boston and L.A. and Colorado, where, like, you wanted that guy to chase a cup with.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, just chasing it, got close, but
crazy.
I mean, in my, like I said, in my eyes, he's a Stanley Cup champion. That puck definitely went in, but unfortunately, his name is not engraved into Lord Stanley's mug. But
one of those players, though, I don't know how many would have 1,300 points. I mean, he got exactly that, but also over 1,000 penalty minutes.
Like, yeah, that's what I was about to say.
Yeah, it shows the style of player he was, for sure.
Do you guys, little trivia on him. Do you remember the number he wore that wasn't number 12?
Oof.
It was with LA right at the end.
Oh, yeah. Well, I only do because it comes up on Elite Prospects, but it did open my eyes. I'll let Mikey guess.
8?
Close. Ooh.
He's close, but kind of
but far.
You're close and far. 88. Yay. Yes. We're 88 with the Kings.
Yeah, I remember there being jersey. 8 involved. Yeah. Yeah. Weird.
All right. So good for Iginla. Good for the class of 2020. Let's take one more quick timeout, and then I want to talk about the Metropolitan Division real quick before we get out of here. But we want to remind you this episode is brought to you by Bet Online, your number one spot for all the hockey, basketball, and football action this season. Head to their new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus and your first deposit. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. From football, basketball, baseball, postseason, NHL, boxing, UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Do not wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. Bet Online, where the game starts. Joe DiBiase, Mike DiStefano, Ross Levitan here on the Locked On NHL podcast. We're running long, so we'll be quick here on this last segment, guys. But I did want to bring up the Metropolitan Division before we got out of here, just because I have no idea what to do with it. Like, everybody is 500 or better, and the Islanders are right now sitting in last, but they haven't played a home game yet. So how much am I really supposed to knock them for being 5-5-2? But if they're not bad, I don't know. Like, Columbus is actually playing pretty well. I guess they would be the number one candidate to kind of fall off here. But I want to hear what you guys have to think about the Metro, because I have a team I want to get to in a second that I think is going to fall way off the cliff. But how about the Islanders to start with? Like, how much can you judge them given they haven't played a home game?
I'll start just because I saw them play last weekend in Winnipeg, and they got a 2-0 win. It was just like a classic Islanders win. Anders Lee scored out front of the net. It was his first goal of the year, which kind of surprised me. It was like the 8th, 9th game. He's the captain. He's kind of their leading guy offensively outside of Matthew Barzal. But once they scored that goal, shut it down, keep it to the outside. I think they only had about 23 shots on goal, but their identity is so clear and so pronounced that that's an identity that, it works on the road, but it works so much better on home ice. And when they can establish that, I think that it's just going to be that much better. Now, in the past and in their past two playoffs where they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals both times, and if there is a team that's maybe not as strong as Tampa, we could be talking about them as a potential Stanley Cup champion over what they've built and without a true superstar. Now, maybe you could argue me on Barzal, but other than that, like, this is a team that just does it by committee. And I just see them playing that game all year long. Now, what the key to that is, and you can also say it's a key to hockey, but great goaltending. And they're getting that not only from Varlamov, but from Sorokin as well. So they're a team that, for me, is not going to be outside of the playoff picture. But to your point, Joe, who the hell is going to get knocked out here? Devils have played great hockey. Philly's in, it seems, every game too. And those would have been my teams before the season that were on the outside looking in. Pittsburgh, I think the fact they're 500 without Malkin and only with one game of Crosby, that's pretty impressive too. So yeah, I hadn't even really dialed in to the Metro Division, but seeing this now, it's super impressive.
I'll say this about the Islanders. I think the fact that they haven't played a home game yet and they're still a 500 team is insane, actually. Mm-hmm. Like, that's got to be a slog, and it looks like it's starting to take a toll. Since that game that you talked about, Ross, they're actually they've lost 3 in a row, Since then, they lost 5-2 to the Wild. They lost 4-0 to the Devils, and then they lost tonight 4-1 to the Lightning. So it seems like their structure and their goaltending and just the team overall starting to fade a little bit with this two-month-long road trip, which is just insane. And they still have two more games to go before they finally get home on November 21st against my Toronto Maple Leafs. So I'm assuming that's going to be an L for Toronto because that building is going to be rocking once they get into that place. So it seems like it's starting to fall off just a little bit. But as they – I'm not going to judge it until they get home and we'll see what they look like maybe 3 weeks from now. But the fact that they're still somewhat in it, I think is actually rather impressive, to be honest with you, considering this the weird – start that they've had to their schedule due to their building being at a commish for the first little bit of the season.
The team that I'm going to point out here that I think is going to fall off, maybe not enough to miss the playoffs because they're so high up there, but I would bet they're going to, is the Rangers. And I don't want to make my sole argument on analytics, but it is stark to me that they are dead last in the NHL in Corsi 4 percentage, and they are 24th in expected goals for. They're bottom 10 in like everything, scoring chances for, high danger scoring chances. But where they're, of course, not bottom 10 is in net. Igor Shesterkin is one of the Vezina candidates right now. And I don't want to just throw that out the window because I think that could hold up. He's a goalie where you can't just assume there's going to be regression. I think the talent has always been there with Shesterkin, but he's just been so young and inexperienced that he's just kind of been inconsistent. But I think we know that he's talented. But even still, like a 930 save percentage, like that's their only pathway, I think, to being as good as they've been so far. The bottom six doesn't really produce a lot. Kevin Rooney, Barclay Goodrow, down the middle on the third and fourth line. Kako's only got 1 point on the season. It was an amazing goal, but it was his first goal of the year. So the Rangers would be my pick for a team that I think is going to fall off.
And just on Shesterkin quickly, I'm doing the percentage because I think it's going to be a little bit better. But actually, no, I'll just say like I would also not bet on regression just based on what this guy's done in his career at every single level. Since junior, he's got 181 wins and only 57 losses. Like that is if you bet on him every single game, you would be a millionaire.
You'd be filthy.
I don't care what the odds are. If he was the favorite in every game, because I know the refs are pretty on their side. I think he played for CSK Moscow or one of the big clubs there. But the numbers are absolutely ridiculous. Even in North America, like they had this little tease where they're like, oh, we'll start him in Hartford. What's he do? Goes 17-4-5 with like a 934 save percentage. He is just on another planet. And again, just like Sorokin, they're not the biggest goalies, but they're so athletic. They don't give up on any play, and there's very rarely rebounds, but when there are, the athleticism comes out of nowhere, and they make huge saves. Mikey saw it with that game against the Leafs, probably the best overtime this season,
I mean, Shesterkin's an absolute – what is it with Russian goaltenders? They just know how to breed them over there. Like, got Vasilevsky, you got Sorokin, you got Shesterkin. Like, it's just – there's something about – like Russian goaltenders, and they legitimately breed them in a lab. I swear.
Yeah. I wonder
even if Varlamov, he was unreal last year.
I wonder if just they take all the athletic children over there and they just put them in net. You know, like over here, it's like you're going to play football, you're going to play basketball, or if you're playing hockey, usually you're going to be a skater. Defensemen, I guess, is where they're lacking usually on the international level. So maybe they just take all the good athlete defensemen and put the pads on them. I don't know, though. That's reckless speculation for sure. But anyways,
When it comes to the Rangers, I'm just looking this up really quickly. But
another thing that's going to have to come back to the mean is Alexi Lafreniere, who's only got, 2 points? He's got 5 on the year, but I think he's got 1 in his last 9 games.
Paco and Lafreniere combined have really... them not taking a big step forward, I think is why a lot of their underlying numbers really look as poor as they do, because they're relying on them to take that step forward.
So absolutely. I put out a poll last night because Panarin had a disgusting shootout goal. I asked who's the better player between Panarin and Kucherov, and I might lean Kucherov, but I think it's a lot closer than the average fan would expect.
Oh, me too. The exercise I'll always do with things like that in sports is flip-flop them. Put one guy in the other situation and put that guy in his situation.
Yeah.
What does Artemi Panarin do in Tampa Bay? I think he's probably putting up very similar production to what Kucherov does.
No doubt. 74% said Kucherov there. Shocker.
Yeah.
Wow. I think I vote Kucherov on that, on that one.
Hard to go against with the amount of points he's put up his last healthy season. He too.
The thing I was going to say about the Rangers and why, what I think may also be somewhat sustainable is like, I've seen what their shooting percentage was in conjunction with the league average, and it's pretty well the same. League average shooting percentage right now is 9.4%. They're shooting at 9.9. So it's safe to say that the offense that they're getting, I guess, is pretty well sustainable, which isn't a great thing. So maybe you're onto something there, Joe, because if this is all the offense that they're going to produce all season long and they don't get lights out goaltending from Shesterkin, perhaps a slight regression could be in the future of the Rangers.
Even if I predict them to fall off, by the way, I would still pick Columbus right now to finish last. They're playing well. They deserve credit for what they've done so far. I just think talent's going to win the day there.
Good goaltending there, too. They also got
great goaltending, though. Like, I know. Merzlikins is playing unreal.
I know.
Team of Destiny, too.
I hate their team up front.
Hey, Team of Destiny, boys.
Yeah. All right. Ross, thanks, man. You went super long with us. You want to take a minute to plug your stuff?
Oh, just sure. Just quickly. Locked On Senators. You know, it's a fun team to follow in 310 days without having them play a game, which was awfully fun. So now this week is just going to breeze by. No. We have fun. You can find us on YouTube or on Twitter at Sen Central. I appreciate you having me, boys. Been following you guys for a long time and watching the show. So great to be on it. And I'm always yelling at my radio when you guys are on. So now at least I can chime in. So thanks for having me.
Hell yeah.
Love you, Ross. Love it, buddy.
Love it. Thanks, man. That's going to do it for us on today's episode. I'll be back with Rachel Donner of Locked On Flyers on Friday show. And then me and Mike will be back next Tuesday. Thanks everybody for listening and making Locked On NHL your number one listen. Now go make Locked On Bets your second listen, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. Talk to you on Friday.